Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is St. Patrick's Day. It's March 17th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And even though we're going to have only a truncated amount of time with Father Brendan Fitzgerald, who is the pastor at St. Barnabas Church, at least we'll be able to respect the tradition of the Irish and St. Patrick's Day. So good morning, Father. How are you?
Good morning, Hazy. Thank you for having me. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to you. What an honor.
Thank you.
You know, unfortunately, because of the coronavirus, the New York City Irish Day Parade has been canceled. The one in Yonkers, unfortunately, also canceled. You know, just so that people can stay safe. I don't think that's ever happened before in a St. Patrick's Day.
No, it hasn't. It's historical. But I'm just after coming from celebrating Mass. We had a Mass at 8:30. And
yes,
by God's grace, over 5,000 people were able to join me for the 8:30 Mass through Facebook Live. I have cameras set up in the church. So the Mass was broadcast live on Facebook. And I checked the little number after to see how many were watching. There was over 5,000 people watching that Mass. So it's different. My plans for St. Patrick's Day have, you know, totally changed. But we did the most important thing for us, people of faith. We're celebrating on St. Patrick's Day. It's more than just culture. What we're celebrating is our faith, the gift of faith that St. Patrick brought. He brought Catholicism, Christianity to Ireland. So we marked that in the most wonderful way we could by celebrating Mass. And it's an interesting fact.
What's so interesting, isn't that the cement that binds the Irish culture, the Irish, the history?
It is.
And it is religion that permeates seemingly every aspect of whatever we think of as Irish.
Every single aspect. You know, I'll give you a good example of that, Izzy.
Yes.
If you were to remove the word God from the Gaelic language, you'd have to find new ways to say nearly everything. For instance, the way people say the greeting for hello is Dia Dis, which means God be with you.
Yeah.
And then the response back is Dia Smiridit, God and Mary with you. So it worked its way into every single aspect of life, even everyday language.
Right.
God just became entwined into it. And one of the, you know, St. Patrick was a very clever guy. He came to Ireland and he noticed the people were worshipping water and fire and so on. They were pagans.
Uh-huh.
And rather than, you know, coming down heavy admonishing them, he took what they were doing and made that a path for them to come to God, the one true God. So the water, I'm going to bring you to the creator of the water. The fire, I'm going to bring you to the creator of the fire. And he blessed the water. So in Ireland, there's a lot of what they call holy wells, blessed wells. That's where it comes from. That's why there's so many blessed wells. He would have seen the wells where they were worshipping water and so on. He said, I'm going to make this a holy thing. I'm going to put God's blessing upon this water. Instead of worshipping the water, worship the creator of the water and allow him to use this water as a vehicle to bless you. So holy water would be a huge thing in Ireland. You know, I'd like to kind of mention is, you know, a lot of us are saying, oh, St. Patrick's Day, it's the day for the Irish. And I get that, but it's a day for everyone. St. Patrick is universal. St. Patrick, first of all, he was an Irish. He wasn't a native Irish man. There's debate whether he was Roman or whether he was British or whatever. But he came to Ireland as a missionary. And he brought us this great gift. And in turn, what he imparted to the Irish was also a missionary spirit. The same missionary spirit that brought him to Ireland, he imparted that to the Irish people. So the Irish people became great, great missionaries and went to all these African countries, Indian countries. During the dark times in Europe, they revitalized Europe. So St. Patrick is the patron saint, yes, of Ireland. He's also the patron saint of Nigeria.
Yes,
he's the patron saint of saint of the Archdiocese of New York. So today is a day everyone in New York, every Catholic, He's the patron. He's our patron, you know. So there's a universality in it, and what unites us is our faith. You know, that's really what we're celebrating the most.
Hmm. It's really a wonderful, wonderful tradition. And then I looked up because, you know, I'm not as a Catholic of faith, so I wanted to look up a little bit more, you know, because there's so many wonderful authors and poets that are Irish, and I wonder where they got that capacity, because, you know, I'm a wordsmith myself in the news business, but I haven't written a book yet. But they
not
say
yet.
I've got
you'll get there.
Not yet.
There's one in you.
So, yeah, hopefully there's one in there. And but it was very, very interesting to see. And that, too, has been part of the Irish tradition, their capacity to give expression to ideas and concepts. And even from a political perspective, I was surprised that the Irish led so much of that was, in a sense, eye-opening in fighting for their freedom in the 1800s. So it goes back a long time how far they've been fighting and for freedom. And I think it's like 100-some-odd years later, it looks like the Irish really are getting control of their nation. Do you feel that when you were in Ireland? Did you feel that too?
Sure, it's constantly evolving. In terms of the literature, one of the things I take great pride out of is the 1916 leaders of the 1916 revolution.
Yes,
many of them, as well as being freedom fighters and revolutionaries, they were also poets. Patrick Pearse, Joseph Mary Plunkett wrote one of my favorite poems. I see his blood upon the rose, and in the stars the glory of his eyes. His body gleams amid eternal snows. His tears fall from the sky. I see his face in every flower, the thunder, the singing of the birds, I put his voice. So those beautiful words were put together by one of the leaders of our revolution who fought for freedom. And Joseph Mary Plunkett, if anyone wants to Google a good poem, Google him. I see his blood upon the rose. And everywhere he looked in this poem, it's like he sees Christ, he sees the Lord. Words, music, sport, all these things are a big part of our culture. And, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, definitely economically we weren't the wealthiest country, and brought out something richer in us. And I believe literature was part of that. Music is a big part of that. And sport is a big part of that. That they're the things we really take incredible pride.
Well, there was also a legacy from the 1916, I know that because I'm an Israeli born, I knew that one of the leaders, one of the prime ministers in Israel, was Menachem Begin, but he traveled. I think he's Polish born, but he traveled in 1916 to Ireland in order to understand and appreciate their struggle for freedom and independence.
That's so interesting.
And
I
they
didn't
used
know that.
Many of the concepts were brought back in order to create at that time it was a Jewish state, not in 1916, but so much later. But that was the very beginning because the light was lit in Ireland and it was so powerfully understood around the world.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. I got to ask you because I know we have truncated time. Mayor Koch from New York, he at one time used to write for me in my paper. Unfortunately, he passed away many years ago. But he had a saying, and he said that the Jews were the lost tribe from the lost tribe of Israel. But they were actually Irish originally, and I didn't know that the old Aramaic and Hebrew are similar in sound to Gaelic. And I had not known that at all, which is interesting from a language perspective. So, and then I'm going to probably learn a lot more because my niece married a man from Ireland and they got married in Ireland. So now maybe a little bit closer.
Sure,
that'd be tradition. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's there's so much worthwhile studying, and there's not enough time.
That's so interesting. But yeah, I think he also used to say that everyone is Irish on St. Patrick's Day. That was one of their catches.
Quotations
every St. Patrick's Day. And what unites us is that spirit. And, you know, today more than ever, we need to be united. Look out for each other, you know.
Exactly.
I'm sure our listeners are, you know, the best way we could celebrate St. Patrick's Day today is maybe think about someone who might need a little help, some neighbor or friend who's maybe shut in, needs something brought from the store.
Yeah.
Make a phone call to someone who could be a little down at the dumps, cheer them up, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Father, I would love to talk to you more, but I know that you've got responsibilities and, you know, you're wanted and needed elsewhere. So hopefully you'll consider coming back at another time, even though it may not be St. Patrick's Day. So there are so many things to relish that's Irish.
I look forward to it, and every blessing to you and your listeners.
And to you as well. Thank you, Father. What an honor. Thank you for making
the
time. Thank you. Be well. Oh, how exciting. You almost brought me to tears. My God. All right, let's just quickly look. Literally, my God, it's overwhelming. You could almost feel the power. You could sense the religiosity of the man. I've never met him. Don't even know what he looks like. Actually, I did. I don't know what he looks like. Actually, I saw a picture of him. I don't remember. I think I was looking up his name because he's at the church, St. Barnabas Church. So I think there was a picture of him. But I don't know. You know, the picture was small. I didn't really get a sense of him, and he didn't seem to be dressed in priestly robes. So I just wasn't sure how to take it. But I could sense it, even though we're not in the same room. So let's take a quick break, find out what's going on in our neck of the woods, then we'll come back and we'll cover a lot of international news, which is important as well. So let's find out what we're doing at the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Well, we've gotten a new number at the Yonkers Tribune. Should you care to give them a call, the number is 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. And this number is the office number, it's the cell number, it's the text number, and it's a voicemail a number as well. So all one number, 347-415-4326. Now, one of the most important things that came out, we've been working on it for over 2 weeks now. We had heard that there was something going on with respect to the county. And so the title of the article, which I posted yesterday, is called Non-Disclosure Agreement Requested by the Office of Westchester County Executive Latimer, was shared with local municipalities and is related to protect health information by keeping a lid on information that may be pertinent to the public interest. And it's written by me, Hezi Aris, because it's a hezitorial. It's called the Non-Disclosure Agreement Hezitorial. So I wrote it as if it came out of White Plains because that's where the seat of the Westchester County Executive is. It was dated yesterday. So this is what it says. The inference deduced from a requested non-disclosure agreement sent to local governments with respect to protected health information by the Office of Westchester County Executive George Latimer is evidently intentioned to prevent or lessen a serious and or imminent threat to the health and safety of the public and or an individual person. A non-disclosure agreement to become effective, a city, town, or village would need to gain authority from their respective legislative branch of government, approving such a request from its respective executive branch of government, that is, of a mayor, supervisor, or a municipal or a city manager, to enter into such an agreement. Well, Westchester County government spokespeople, claiming ignorance of having been even aware of such requests to different municipalities for such an agreement, suggests that some of those who should know are unaware of what is happening under their aegis. Because I called up and I spoke to two people in communications. I said, we don't know what this is about. We don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, the article continues and says, while ignorance may seem plausible to some, the response of feigned ignorance or dementia is in fact deliberate and chosen conduct that undermines their character while defining their demeanor. At issue is whether the public interest is of tantamount concern or whether county government's concern is liability by their own deficient, deleterious misconduct. Well, that's the way it is, and that's how I see it. You may see it different, I don't know, or differently. The thing is that these are very, very pertinent issues, and it's unfortunate that we don't get a straight answer from the county executive's office. If this is the only time that that's the case, you be the judge. But I know that this is their conduct for many, 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 many times and for a very long time, even before the county executive ever got into office. So it just is what it is. You know, some of these politicians really need to get their act together. But more importantly than they're getting their act together, the people have to get their act together, because the people have to start to recognize that not all these politicians actually work for the public interest. They work to get reelected. They work to hold on to their job. And they have a gift for gab, and that is that defines who they are, but constructive. And that's the point. It's not conducive to and inclusive of the public that they're intent or supposed to share their responsibility and meet the public's demand. So these are very, 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 very big issues. Now, let's just look at some other things. This you may find very interesting. It's a new commentary that was written by Richard Brodsky. He's a former New York State Assemblyman, and he titles this article, Confronting the Questions and Challenges of a New Reality. I like the piece which he writes. He writes for us every week. But what's interesting is I liked his perspective. It's a little bit different than what you find in so many other places. I like his thinking. There is no template for leadership in a time of plague. What we want from leaders may not be what is needed. Assurance, protection, and cheerfulness are what we supply to children in a crisis. Truth and warning would serve us better. Nor is there a model for how to behave in our private lives in a time of plague. We instinctively reach for human contact when we are threatened. Now we must avoid congregating and touching. Nor are the new modalities of communication adequate to the times. We have lost the authoritative filters of news and fact. Opinion and rumor dominate electronic media, with little information coming from trusted countervailing sources. Finally, we are forced to acknowledge how little we really know about most things. the panic exhibited by our economic masters of the universe as markets collapse is befuddlement of the chattering class. Individually, we don't know what to do. Work, shopping, movies. Confronting such truths in turn initially brings an overwhelming sense of helplessness. But slowly, we are starting to get advice that seems trustworthy, even in the midst of the false optimism and hysteria that oscillate before us. There are models of leadership that shine. Bless Dr. Anthony Fauci, who heads an obscure federal agency, better known as the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, and has emerged as the voice of science and honesty. He understands the science and art of public health. His intelligence, concern, and demeanor come warmly through the television screen. The local officials in Westchester who are on the front lines of decision-making are calming and recognizable. The armed competence of the governor helps. From our current leaders will come both constructive and destructive behaviors that won't be hard to recognize. Particular economic and public health policies will sort themselves out. There is little anyone can do to affect this. The noise is inevitable. For the rest of us, the best advice seems to be to stay home and wash your hands, okay? But once we've absorbed and taken that advice, there is an opportunity worth considering. Amid the noise, there is benefit to an active silence. The challenge is not just philosophical. There are questions that need consideration. This plague can be viewed as a harbinger of a changed world. We have recognized the realities of wildfires and melted glaciers. Can we anticipate a world of regular microbial invasions even more virulent? Can we combat such things without change in our most basic institutions? Is healthcare a right or is it apportioned on ability to pay? How many hospitals or respirators or vaccines do we need? Who will pay? Perforce, we will have the time to consider such things and others. That itself is an opportunity not to be wasted. And beyond the present havoc, this plague is a warning about our future. We are likely to come through the present crisis battered but intact. But the new realities are undeniable and must be confronted. And he suggests, Richard Brodsky suggests, think about them. And this article was initially published by Times Union on the 15th of March. We were so overwhelmed at our end here at the Yonkers Tribune, just couldn't get everything up and online. It's been that busy, you know, trying to keep up with different governments and different sections of Westchester County and to be able to give everyone as much notice as possible. Because the communities are vast, and you could be up in Bedford, or you could be up in Bronxville, or you could be in the Bronx, or you could be, Ossining, or Yonkers, or Portchester, Peekskill. You know, it is huge, and we need to recognize that, and that's very, very important. Okay, so let's look and see what else is going on in our neck of the woods. Just want to make sure that everything's okay with our studio screen. Looks like we're fine. And what I want you to do then is cover some other news with you. One second. Bear with me a moment. One second. You know, we were talking about Ireland originally with the father, and evidently Dublin is deserted as the coronavirus dampened St. Patrick's Day. Well, it seems that pubs were shuttered and pints left unpoured on St. Patrick's Day in Dublin, at least that's today, as the Irish capital swapped its annual riot of celebration for, quote, social distancing, end quote, designed to stem the spread of coronavirus. The cobbled streets of Temple Bar, usually the epicenter of celebrations, were deserted. This place would be just swarming with people. The whole town would be, said Dubliner Anthony White. It's like a ghost town. It's like Armageddon, the 49-year-old advised Agent France Presse. Last week, Ireland's government canceled St. Patrick's parades nationwide, asked pubs to close, and curbed gatherings of more than 100 individuals until March 29. Social distancing, remaining apart from others in public, has also been strongly advised. On a day like St. Patrick's Day, you can really feel it, said Justin Sinnott, 44, strolling through abandoned streets with his young son on his shoulders. Two people have died from coronavirus in Ireland, which has 223 confirmed cases so far. Prime Minister Leo Varadkar said he expected 15,000 cases in the country by the end of March. In central Dublin, St. Patrick's Day decorations featuring brimming pints of Guinness, leprechauns, and pots of gold found no customers to tempt. In one open corner shop, staff wore face masks. Coronavirus, COVID-19, we are closed. Government and HSC, which is the health service advice, a handwritten sign on one of the area's most popular drinking spots. While most Irish citizens have lost a night on the town, others have felt the blow more dearly. State broadcaster RTE estimated 140,000 hospitality and childcare workers have been laid off over government coronavirus measures. Quote, we're preparing for the worst, end quote, said tourism transport worker John Gately, cycling through central Dublin wearing protective blue rubber gloves. The 30-year-old has not yet joined those laid off as a result of the coronavirus. Quote, it's a case of just battening down the hatches and trying to recover, he said. This is totally unprecedented in my lifetime. Continuing, he said, I'm kind of fascinated and terrified at the same time. It's like being in a horror movie, and we're just waiting to see what happens next week. Last year, an estimated 500,000 people attended Dublin's St. Patrick's Festival. Irish media reported around 100,000 attendees were overseas visitors. But with pubs closed and various foreign governments banning flights from European nations, many tourists had already begun to filter home. And some U.S. travelers had brought forward their flights home before Washington's travel ban on European countries was extended to include Ireland and the U.K. from about 4 o'clock in the morning local time. It just escalated so quickly in the last several days, Travis Mino told Agence France-Presse at Dublin Airport as he prepared to board a flight to Washington, D.C. And others were determined to soldier on with efforts to celebrate Ireland's patron saint on Tuesday. Strange times, said cheerful Russian tourist Alexei Vishdibeyos, sporting a shamrock green and a fake gingerbread. Ginger beard, rather. Because the Irish supposedly have reddish hair. So no parade, no holiday, but a holiday is in the head and in the heart, not only in the street. So I'm ready and going to my single parade, the 45-year-old said before setting off on a solo route around the eerie streets of the capital. So really very, very interesting and very exciting, to say the least. Now, let's just see what else is coming on. And let's see what else is going on in Europe. Bear with me a moment. Evidently, Europe is going to halt all non-essential travel as the global virus panic continues. And European leaders plan to ban all non-essential travel into the continent today. The latest drastic attempt to curb the coronavirus pandemic that has upended society, battered markets, and killed thousands around the world, with French President Emmanuel Macron describing the battle against COVID-19 as a, quote, war, end quote, governments around the world are imposing restrictions rarely seen in peacetime, slamming borders shut and forcing citizens to stay home. crisis is infecting every sector of the economy, and Wall Street stocks on Monday sank more than 12% in the worst session since the crash of 1987, despite emergency intervention by central banks and governments to shore up confidence. After the initial outbreak in a Chinese city in December, even though it was discovered in November 17th, Europe has emerged as the epicenter of the virus, with more deaths now recorded outside China than inside. Italy, Europe's hardest hit nation, announced another surge in deaths, taking its overall toll to more than 2,000 in a worldwide total of more than 7,000. More than 182,260 cases have been recorded in 162 countries. In a somber address to the nation, French President Macron ordered the French to stay at home for 15 days, starting midday Tuesday, which is today, banning all non-essential trips or social contacts, and warning violations would be punished, quote unquote. Now, with European nations already closing their borders, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen had said she would ask the leaders of the bloc's Schengen visa-free border zone to stop all non-essential travel into the area. Concretely, all trips between non-European countries and EU countries will be suspended for 30 days, Macron said in his address. And this follows a ban on inbound travel to the United States, whose President Donald Trump warned the fight against the virus could last months. U.S. health officials said the first human trial to evaluate a possible vaccine had begun, although it may be another year to 18 months before it becomes available. In another small glimmer of hope, China reported just one domestic case on Tuesday, but found 20 imported from abroad. Now, Trump said he was asking Americans to restrict gatherings to groups of fewer than 10 people, as the streets of New York and the capital, Washington, D.C., stood largely deserted. One customer at a French restaurant in Brooklyn said she felt the moves were unprecedented. Quote, "I want strong leadership, but it's scary," she said. "I've never experienced anything like this before, and I don't think my parents have. I don't think anyone has," said Kelly McGee. And there's something about being in this apocalyptic vibe and being with other people and experiencing it together that I think I still crave, she added. Now, Trump acknowledged the United States may be, quote unquote, heading into a recession due to the virus, as G7 leaders vowed to coordinate their responses to the virus and do whatever it takes using all policy tools after a meeting held by video conference. Well, every sector from tourism to food to aviation is affected as the global economy effectively goes into shutdown. European car makers, including Fiat Chrysler and Peugeot, began shutting down their factories, and major world airlines axed almost all flights temporarily, triggering pleas to help carriers survive. The head of the World Health Organization called for every suspected coronavirus case to be tested, something which would send the known tally of the sick skyrocketing. "You cannot fight a fire while blindfolded," said the World Health Organization chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who presented his thinking to journalists that attended. He says, "Test, test, test. Test every suspected case," he said. Very few countries have been left untouched by the virus as it continues its relentless march across the globe, and a cascading number are taking increasingly drastic responses. Britain called for an end to all non-essential contact and travel, but stopped short of ordering businesses shut, while Switzerland declared a state of emergency. Germany banned gatherings in churches, mosques, and synagogues, and said playgrounds and non-essential shops would close. Now, tens of millions of people in Southeast Asia were ordered into effective home quarantines, with Malaysia and the Philippines announcing unprecedented lockdowns on Monday. In India, the world's second most populous country, where most schools and entertainment facilities have already shut down, the Taj Mahal was on Tuesday closed to visitors. Chile and Peru announced a total closure of their borders, while Canada closed its borders to foreigners except Americans for now. There are also growing doubts over the European football championships set to take place in 12 countries this summer and the Olympics in Japan as the virus decimates the sporting calendar. So a lot of trouble all over the place, and a lot of stuff is going to, yeah, now we just got this in, came in now. The UEFA will postpone the Euro 2020 until 2021 due to the coronavirus. So the games are off. Now, let me just look at some other things that you might find interesting. Bear with me a moment. This is interesting because it's like a reversal by the president. Evidently, Donald Trump admits that the coronavirus, quote, is not under control, end quote, and says the crisis may last all summer. So the White House on Monday urged all older Americans to stay home and everyone to avoid crowds and eating out at restaurants as part of a sweeping new guideline or guidelines meant to combat an expected surge of coronavirus cases. Now, President Donald Trump and the Coronavirus Task Force released the guidelines as the U.S. government moved to try to blunt the impact of the virus, racing to bolster testing and aid even as financial markets fell and Americans scrambled to reorder their lives. Well, the new recommendations included over the next 15 days that Americans should not gather in groups of more than 10 people. Schooling should be at home and discretionary travel and social visits should be avoided. If anyone in a household tests positive for the virus, everyone who lives there should stay home. And if everyone in America does that, we ask for over the next 15 days, we will see a dramatic difference. Deborah Birx, a White House coronavirus response coordinator, said at the White House briefing. When asked when the pandemic would subside, Trump said that if we do a really good job, quote unquote, the crisis could pass in July or August, a far less optimistic take than in his earlier predictions that it would be over within weeks. We will rally together as one nation and we will defeat the virus, the U.S. president added, quote, we can turn the corner and turn it quickly. Now, Trump also, for the first time, acknowledged that the virus, which has battered the global markets, may send the nation's economy into a recession, a potentially brutal blow for an incumbent in an election year. He also, without providing details, said that the administration quote, we're going to back the airlines 100%, a note of reassurance for an industry crippled by travel bans and fears of spreading the virus. Trump, who adopted his most somber tone yet when discussing the crisis, acknowledged that it was, quote, not under control, end quote, in the United States or globally, but said he did not yet plan to call for domestic travel restrictions. Now, the administration did not immediately define what an older American was in terms of recommendations to stay home. On Monday, Trump also said he might ask the military to help build temporary hospitals to tackle the worsening coronavirus outbreak. Asked if the Army Corps of Engineers would build emergency hospitals, Trump said, quote, we're looking into it. We're looking into it very strongly, he said. Trump also said he felt the postponement of primary elections like those advanced in Ohio, Georgia, Louisiana, and Kentucky were generally unnecessary. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine said on Twitter his administration was ordering election polls closed on Tuesday in defiance of a state court ruling to the contrary. Well, the number of known coronavirus infections and deaths in the United States has paled in comparison with hotspots of the global pandemic, such as China, Italy, as well as Iran. But the tally of confirmed U.S. cases has multiplied quickly over the past few weeks, surpassing passing 4,600 and prompting fears American hospitals might soon be overwhelmed. Italian medical centers have been strained in the breaking point. At least 83 people in the United States had died of the virus as of Monday, according to Johns Hopkins University and public health agencies, with the hardest hit state, Washington, accounting for the bulk of the fatalities, including six more announced on Monday. Now, the unprecedented wave of closures and restrictions, which began to accelerate last week, took on fresh urgency as the New Jersey, quote, strongly discouraged all non-essential and non-emergency travel between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. starting yesterday. Well, the states of New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut struck a regional agreement to close all movie theaters, casinos, and gyms as of 8 p.m. on Monday, last night. Restaurants and bars in all four states where more than 22 million people live will serve takeout and delivery only. Well, officials in six San Francisco Bay Area counties on Monday ordered residents to stay at home for all but the most crucial outings until April 7. And that directive came a day after California Governor Gavin Newsom urged adults older than 65 and their caretakers to remain indoors whether or not they have underlying health conditions. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, said that efforts by state and local governments were insufficient to confront the coast-to-coast crisis. This is a national problem, he said. Be done in a piecemeal method, Cuomo said, calling for bold action involving the military and Army Corps of Engineers to quickly create excess hospital capacity. In the nation's capital, Washington, a deeply divided Senate was considering a multi-billion-dollar emergency spending bill requiring sick leave for some workers and expanded unemployment compensation, while the Supreme Court postponed oral arguments for the first time in over a century. So a lot going on, a lot not necessarily seen, but it's very compelling stuff, that's for sure. And this is interesting because we have another perspective, this one from Germany, from Angela Merkel, who announced strict measures, and she told German people to stay home in the fight against the virus. And German leaders on Monday urged citizens to stay home as the government announced unprecedented nationwide measures to radically scale back public life in order to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Chancellor Angela Merkel called on Germans to cancel any holidays at home and abroad. President Frank-Walter Steinmeier had told people to stay at home. The government banned gatherings in churches, mosques, and synagogues and ordered non-essential shops as well as playgrounds shut. The number of virus cases in Germany rose to 6,012 on Monday, a leap of 1,174 in 24 hours, according to the tally posted on disease control agency Robert Koch Institute's website. So far, the country has seen 16 fatalities. At a press conference in Berlin, Merkel said that under the new measures, there shouldn't be any holiday trips undertaken inside the country or outside it. There have never been measures like this in our country before, she said. They are far-reaching, but at the moment, they are necessary. And meanwhile, Steinmeier called on Germans to work together to ensure the virus spreads as slowly as possible. So wherever possible, stay at home, avoid close contact, and have understanding of all restrictive measures, he said in a statement. Now, the sweeping restrictions aimed at, quote, limiting social contact in public places will leave most sites from museums to swimming pools to gyms shuttered. But supermarkets, banks, and post offices will stay open, as will pharmacies and gasoline stations. Now, hairdressers, construction supply stores, and laundromats will also keep operating, the government said. Restaurants and cafes can stay open, but only until 6 p.m. daily. And hotels will only be used for essential and explicitly not for tourist purposes, the government had added. And authorities had last week ordered schools shut, and regional trains had been curtailed in a bid to reduce travel. And Germany also said on Monday that they reintroduced checks on its borders with Austria, France, Switzerland, Luxembourg, and Denmark, turning back motorists without an essential reason to enter Germany. And with most of Europe now in lockdown and stock markets in a tailspin, Berlin on Friday promised companies unlimited credit to keep them afloat. The economic package is worth at least 550 billion euros, that's $614 billion initially, the biggest in Germany's post-war history, which is unbelievable. What a number. Okay, well, you know, in order to keep afloat, that's what they got to do, and that's what they figured. So evidently that makes a lot of sense. Now, let's just see what else is going on. I wanted to check to see other parts of the world. Bear with me a moment here. I wanted to just check and see what else is happening in the Americas that we may not have covered yet with you. Oh, yeah, this is interesting. Ohio scrapped the Democratic primary amid virus fears, but other states continue to vote. And so we'll see where that goes. Latin America is taking steps to counter the coronavirus. Brazil's Bolsonaro snubs at the warnings. And, you know, the U.S. Federal Reserve cut rates, and New York City, L.A. shut restaurants to tackle the coronavirus. And Trump tested negative for coronavirus as the U.S. extends travel ban to the U.K. and Ireland. It seems that it was last week Jair Bolsonaro had visited the president in Florida. He's the he's the president of Brazil, and yet one of the people that came with Bolsonaro, that was a president, was infected. So, but the President Trump didn't have a problem, and he did not test positive. So I guess that's encouraging. Other things that are going on around the world, there's just so much everywhere you look. Now, one second. One thing that's interesting is what's going on in Israel, because they're going through, they're trying to form a government. So Israel's, Gantz is his name, is going to get a chance to form a government after an inconclusive unity talk had come about. So Israel's ex-military chief, Benny Gantz, was nominated on Monday to try to form a government, but further talks were expected with his bitter rival, Premier Benjamin Netanyahu, on an emergency alliance to fight the coronavirus. Now, Gantz, who heads the centrist Blue and White Party, called for unity and urged Prime Minister Netanyahu to join him as Israel seeks to end a crippling political stalemate after three inconclusive elections in less than a year. "We must not have a fourth election," Gantz said, after he was formally nominated to attempt to form an administration by Israel's President Reuven Rivlin. "I'll do everything to form in a few days as possible, a national, patriotic, and a broad government," Gantz, who's 60, won recommendations on Sunday from 61 lawmakers, a razor-thin majority in the 120-member Knesset or parliament. Now, his backers did not include Netanyahu's right-wing Likud, but Rivlin has urged the two men to work together in an emergency unity government in order to avoid a national policy vacuum in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Continuing, he said, "It's possible that forming a government quickly will require interim arrangements for the coming months, Rivlin had said. Now, Gantz's path to a longer-term, stable coalition is difficult given the deep divisions within the factions that backed him, which includes the mainly Arab Joint List and the nationalist Yisrael Beiteinu. Now, Rivlin officially granted Gantz 28 days to try to form a government, a task which proved impossible for any candidates following the two elections last year. And Netanyahu, who is Israel's longest-serving premier and the first ever to be indicted in office on graft charges, has insisted that voters in the March 2nd election gave him mandate to continue as prime minister. Now, the vote saw Likud secure the most seats, but along with the religious party allies, it fell three seats short of a majority. Now, Gantz has a hollow mandate. Political columnist Sima Kadmon had written in the Israeli newspaper Yediot Achanot, referring to the possibly insurmountable divisions within the anti-Netanyahu camp. Rivlin has made clear he wants a government in place soon to help Israel beat back the COVID-19 pandemic. He said political leaders have a duty to form a government amid the national and international emergency. Fourth elections are not a possibility, added Rivlin, who is largely a ceremonial figure. Now, Rivlin had summoned Gantz and Netanyahu on Sunday for an urgent conversation, which ended without agreement, but Likud and Blue and White said that the talks would continue. The prospects for the two men coming to terms may be remote, especially as mutual acrimony has ramped up in recent days. A new Knesset will also be sworn in later on Monday in a stripped-down ceremony due to the coronavirus. And so we'll have to see where all this goes. So far, Israel has 225 cases of coronavirus with no fatalities, but tens of thousands in home quarantine. Authorities have banned gatherings of more than 10 people and ordered schools, universities, restaurants, and cafes to close, among other measures. Now, Netanyahu, 70, on Sunday proposed a six-month unity government that would lead to manage the response to the pandemic. He also offered a four-year arrangement that would see the two leaders equally split the job of prime minister. And Gantz doesn't believe a single word Netanyahu says. That's what a columnist by the name of Nahum Barnea had written in Yediot Achanot, arguing against the prospects of an alliance. But Barnea added that coronavirus could prove a key to a deal. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Now, let me just quickly look at some other places that may be of pertinence. One second. One moment. All right. I don't think there's – everything is coronavirus, if you must know. It seems to be that is the most compelling issue. And everything is related to it one way or the other. What I should do is really spend a little bit more time with you with respect to what's going on in the markets. Well, stocks have plunged worldwide as central bank action fails to ease the virus fears. It seems that stock markets and oil prices fell into a free fall on Monday, as interest rate cuts and fresh stimulus measures by central banks failed to lift confidence, with analysts warning that the USA's Federal Reserve may have reached the limits of its power to fend off recession as the coronavirus spreads. Brent North Sea oil plunged more than 10% to a four-year low, as a price war between major producers Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, versus Russia added to sliding crude demand caused by the virus. Well, the euro surged 1% against the dollar after the Fed on Sunday slashed borrowing costs to almost zero, its second emergency cut in less than 2 weeks. Well, the U.S. Central Bank also unveiled a massive asset buying program similar to measures also put into place under the global financial crisis more than a decade ago. The Bank of Japan joined in on Monday, saying it would ramp up its bond buying program. New Zealand Central Bank also slashed rates to record lows in an attempt to cushion the economic blow, while the People's Bank of China has injected vast sums into financial markets to ease liquidity worries. In joint action coordinated with the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of Canada, and the Swiss National Bank, the Fed moved to counteract global, quote, dollar funding pressures, end quote, according to its boss, Jerome Powell. But traders were left unimpressed, with the virus showing no sign of letting up, while the head of the World Health Organization, Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said it was impossible to tell when it would peak globally. Now, with G7 leaders set to hold crisis video conferences talks later on Monday, IMF Chief Kristalina Georgieva called Monday to global governments to work together to provide massive spending as in the 2008 financial crisis to help the economy withstand the damage from the coronavirus pandemic. Trading was halted on Wall Street just after the opening bell with the Dow Jones dropping nearly 10%. In afternoon trading in Europe, Paris 10.7%, down Milan 10.9%, Madrid 11.3%, Frankfurt 9.5%, and London 7.9%. Airlines and tourism groups were biggest fallers, actually, after slashing capacity with TUI, that's a tourism company, down by nearly a third, and it's based out of Britain. British Airways parent IAG crashed 28%. The car sector also slid as car makers Fiat Chrysler and Peugeot Citroën said that they were halting production. Now, while these central bank moves may go some way to easing any potential blockages in the plumbing of the financial markets, they won't adequately compensate for the upcoming economic shocks that are about to come our way, said the CMC markets analyst by the name of Michael Hewson. Now, the scale of the crisis was led bare by data showing that the Chinese industrial production for January and February shrank 13.5%, the first contraction in around 30 years. And meanwhile, manufacturing activity in New York State fell to its lowest level since 2009, according to the New York Federal Reserve Bank's monthly industry survey. And equity markets continue to be whipsawed by the disease, which has now affected almost 170,000 people and killed more than 6,000, with several countries going into lockdown as Europe becomes the new epicenter of the outbreak. Sydney stock market led losses in Asia Pacific, tumbling 9.7% in its worst daily drop on record, while Manila, that's in the Philippines, shed nearly 8%, and Bangkok in Thailand and Mumbai in India dropped more than 5%. Now, Hong Kong, Singapore, Taipei, and Jakarta all lost more than 4%. Wellington of New Zealand and Seoul of South Korea were more than 3% off. And Shanghai tumbled 3.4% after the release of the industrial production data, which came a week after news that Chinese exports had collapsed. And Tokyo ended 2.5% lower after a rally sparked by the Bank of Japan's support measures announcement had fizzled. So we'll have to see where all that goes. So I think that's really what it is. That's where we are. There's so much to do from on the news that what I'm going to do is will probably end the time with you today at 11 o'clock. We're just about a minute away. I wanted to just check before we let you go, see who we have tomorrow. Well, tomorrow we're going to be speaking, I believe, to Shanae Williams at 10 o'clock in the morning. And we'll see what goes on there. So, and hopefully she'll be able to make it. Otherwise, we'll cover other local news with you. And, what's important, though, is, let me just go back to our screen. What's important is that you stay calm, and we hope that the good Lord and however other forces that come into play will guide our elected officials to do whatever they can to the best of their ability, because it's a difficult, difficult time and a tremendous amount of pressure for everybody to get everything right. So, because also suffering a great deal, they have a lot more anxiety because they probably, as the public, we have less information than anybody else. And yet it all impacts us very, very much. So we'll just have to see where all this goes. Anyway, that's where we have today. We'll announce exactly who's going to be on tomorrow on the website. And I want to thank you all for being with us. And again, wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day, and just enjoy it, even though maybe you've got corned beef at home, so you'll be able to make sandwiches and enjoy it at home. And that's it. So, and it was so good to be able to speak to Father Brendan Fitzgerald, who is the pastor at St. Barnabas Church. And interestingly enough, the church straddles, the church is right on the border between Yonkers and the city of New York, but in the borough of the Bronx. So literally right on the border. And so just a beautiful, beautiful place. And it's nice to be able to hold two, I guess, cities together. With the church as central. And again, it's part of the tradition, of the Irish tradition, to be bound and to extend their hand from a religious perspective. Very, very compelling. All right. Well, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the day. Enjoy the week. Help out those people that you need to help out or that you can help out. And I just hope that we all go through and process this as best we can. Take care, folks. Goodbye.